SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Has taken over. Let's go. It's Pharrell.
Coast to coast.
Steaks, chicks, stacks. You and I are going to make a lot of money. It's Pharrell. Coast to coast.
What is up, world? It is Keith Irizarry, coast to coast with you once again. The entire crew is along for the ride. As always, Mafia's in the house. Carver High is in the house. Ty on the boards as well. I'm fired up about Thursday Night Football. And I know there are question marks about this game. Who's running for the Packers and who's receiving for the Niners? And there's a lot of COVID-related issues, and we could talk about that. It was an interesting thing. Maybe about an hour ago, we get the report that maybe Kendrick Bourne had a false positive. Ultimately, and I tried to do some more digging on this one, it doesn't change anything. So Bourne still has to have at least two negatives back-to-back within 24 hours. And then the same thing for, you know, like Debo and Trent Williams and Brandon Ayuk. All these guys still would have to have multiple negative tests no matter what. So none of them are going to play tonight. It doesn't look like Aaron Jones will play tonight either. So you say, Keith, why are you so excited about this game? Well, let me tell you, I think this is a get-right game for the Packers and for Aaron Rodgers. Like, I look at Aaron Rodgers and I say, dude, you got to go out and ball. Now, last week, you come off the rough loss, and it's not all on him. I mean, if their defense could stop a cold, I mean, maybe they could actually do something, but the defense was so porous. I mean, letting Dalvin Cook score four touchdowns on you know, a touchdown on each consecutive drive, right? Four straight touchdowns. It's not something that should happen to your team. And for the Green Bay Packers, this is the ultimate, like, you need to bounce back and kind of put your name back into the upper echelon in the NFC. And then, of course, even just in the landscape of the NFL. And for Aaron Rodgers, it is spread the ball around. I don't really believe that Alan Lazard is going to play tonight, but we're awaiting word on that one, too. I don't think it matters who Aaron Rodgers is throwing the rock to. It's just, I think he's going to be balling. Now, for the San Francisco 49ers, it's big, too, because you're stumbling and you're bumbling. You got Nick Mullins under center. You got God knows who at running back. I know it's Jermichael Hasty and Jerick McKinnon, whatever. But this is big for Kyle Shanahan, because Kyle Shanahan, the young coach, is now dealing once again with adversity. And it is so simple for us to, the same way we do with a lot of young coaches, I think it's either this or that. If you're watching on television right now, you know what I mean. So it's either really high or really low. And there's usually not that middle ground. And Kyle Shanahan, for all the really high, could easily be the really low if this team goes stumbling towards the end of the season. Now, the excuses, it's pretty simple for the excuse, right? There's no starting quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo. You've had injuries on the offensive line. You'd have some injuries on the defensive side of things. You've had COVID-related issues, you know, sapping you of wide receivers. You've had running backs consistently go out. I mean, poor Jeff Wilson Jr., you think about it. This dude goes for three touchdowns, hurts his ankle. He goes on the IR. Raheem Mostert was finally given the chance to be a starting running back, and this cat's out there averaging over 5 yards per carry. He gets hurt. Tevin Coleman comes over, what, last year, 2 years ago, whatever it was. He was trying to get an opportunity. He can't stay healthy. So it's not all on the coaching staff, 100% not all on the coaching staff. So when you look at the Niners, you do have to at least weigh in the fact that there's so many injuries. I want to welcome in all of our radio audience joining us now. I am Keith Irizarry on Coast to Coast. Thank you so much for spending an afternoon with us once again, in for Scott Farrell all week long. But with Kyle Shanahan, he's got the lineage from his dad, and it seems like he falls under the same umbrella. I don't care who my running back is, plug and play. And I think if you're going to win tonight's game, if you're the San Francisco 49ers, this is what you need to do. Make the game ugly. Time of possession, win that battle. Ugly it up. I actually think that, I know we're going to talk about Notre Dame and Clemson later. I think it's kind of similar to that. Like, Notre Dame needs to make that game ugly. Anyway, that'll be an hour number two. We'll dive into some college football stuff. I want to switch gears over to the Miami Dolphins because they're playing the Arizona Cardinals on Sunday. And Miami's not going to be able to rely on just their defense and special teams to get them points. Tua's going to need to do something. You got Arizona, a team that can score. Technically, they're the number one total scoring team in the NFL. They're middle of the pack against quarterbacks, if you're talking about like fantasy standpoint, right? And it's going to be rough sledding, I think, for Tua. Now, Tua's coming off a game in which, he was 12 for 22 passing, 93 passing yards, had a touchdown, completion percentage at 54-55%, sacked once, QBR just 25. Obviously, the boo birds, the questions are going to, you know, arise about Tua and his status and his abilities. And all of it is a trickle-down effect because on one hand, Ryan Fitzpatrick was playing above average football and had your team, the Miami Dolphins, right in the thick of things of the season, right? So there's that. There's that looming shadow of Ryan Fitzpatrick. But then there's also the fact that Burrow and Herbert, the two other big-name quarterbacks taken in this year's draft in the first round of the top 10 picks, are balling out, and they're dominating. And then comes the rumors. Oh, they are going to swirl. You knew they would swirl. And this is what we're going to get into next. Brian Flores, he's ticked off. The head coach, Miami Dolphins. People are talking about a certain reason as to why Tua is starting. He categorically denies it. I'll break that down coming up next. Keith Irizarry, this is Coast to Coast.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back here on Coast to Coast, Keith Irizarry with you, breaking things down on Tua Tagovailoa. I like Tua, and I'm a fan of Tua. I loved watching him play in college, felt bad for him with the injury, felt happy for him that he ended up still getting drafted, you know, in the top five and still going to make that money. My heart of hearts thought that Tua needed almost a redshirt year for the NFL. That being said, once the bye week was moved up for Miami, you kind of knew the timeline just shifted for the Dolphins. Now, again, we did this a little bit yesterday. On one hand, Fitzpatrick had you in the thick of things to maybe make the playoffs. Feel bad for him. But on the other hand, you kind of have to know what you have. And knowing what you have, it's a business. Like, I know we want to talk about this as being like, oh, you know, let's be nice. Let's be nice people. But it is still definitely a business. And from a business standpoint, the Miami Dolphins need to know if Tua is the guy going forward. And it leads me to this, and we'll bring up the quote as well. So Brian Flores, he's annoyed right now. And he was asked about whether or not Tua is auditioning to be the quarterback of the future. And he said, there's a couple things out there. Let's call it a source close to the Dolphins thinking, saying that we are auditioning Tua. I'm just going to tell you about my thinking. We brought Tua here because we believe in him, same as all the other draft picks. We believe developing players and improving players on a daily basis. That would be the opposite of giving someone a 10-game audition. That's just my thinking on that, just so everybody is clear. Now, here's the deal. I believe him. Except everyone is auditioning for a position in the NFL when they are young. I don't care who you are. If Joe Burrow took over the starting role with the Cincinnati Bengals and stunk up the joint right off the bat, he was auditioning. Now, does he get a second chance? Probably. When quarterbacks are taken that early, save for Josh Rosen, all of these guys get multiple chances at starting roles. There's something about Josh Rosen that didn't work out in the NFL. And he's kind of been cast aside and just, you know, relegated to being either a bench or a practice squad player. Now, the second part about this is just because you're auditioning for a rep, best to remember that the Miami Dolphins have the Texans draft choice. And if we look at what the Texans are right now, they're a bad football team, which means that Dolphins, which was the Texans, could end up being number three, number four. And that brings me now to this. We the book is out, right? You can take a quarterback, number one, two, three, four, five, in the draft, and you can give up on them. The Cardinals did it. They drafted Josh Rosen in the top 10 and then realized immediately, back it up, mistake. This isn't going to work. Kyler Murray was available. Many of the people that, you know, thought they were smart. No way. You don't draft Kyler. How you going to do it? You already drafted a quarterback. You can't admit mistakes. You know what? You can admit mistakes. That's how you keep your job. It's very much akin to what we're looking at with the Dallas Cowboys, right? Like with Mike McCarthy, Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones, if they believe McCarthy is now clearly not the guy, you can admit your mistake and fire him. I'm not telling you that you have to. I'm not even saying, and I said this yesterday, I don't know if McCarthy is the wrong person there. But what I'm saying is, if you realize you made a mistake, it's like, all right, so you marry somebody, and 2 years later, let's say you don't even have kids together yet. 2 years later, you're like, oh man, this is clearly not right. You don't just stay with the person. That's what divorce is. You're allowed to divorce yourself from these players, right? Fine. So here's the other reason why this could be considered like auditioning for Tua. This draft class coming in, you are looking at 5 to 6 quarterbacks that will likely be taken in the first round. We know Trevor Lawrence is going to go number one or two, I guess. Justin Fields is going to go 1, 2, or 3. Trey Lance and Zach Wilson, both are probably top 10 guys. Kyle Trask is anywhere from 11 to 20, depending on team's needs. And then Mac Jones is probably falling into that same category as well. You're looking at 5 to 6 potential first-round quarterbacks that are out there. You need to make sure that Tua is the guy for the future. Now you say, Keith, what happens if Tua is good and you still end up with number four? There is the ability to draft a quarterback and trade it, or to trade that pick for something else. It's called, you know, maneuvering and doing things the right way and running a business. So this is not a slap in the face to Tua. It's not. Just because people are talking about auditioning, it's fine. Technically, we all audition for everything in this world. Every time you get a job, I mean, unless you get, and that's where it's interesting. So the contract that Tua signs, right? What does that contract mean? It means that this said team, Miami Dolphins, are paying you X amount of dollars, and it can be for X amount of years, or it could just be X amount of dollars. You know, the NFL does more guaranteed money, not guaranteed years, right? So it's the same thing. Any of us, me, I'm now full-time with this network, Sports Grid, right? They offer me a contract. And when I sign that deal, that contract means they're going to pay me for X amount of time, right? It doesn't, I mean, push comes to shove. What happens is, let's say I get a show and the ratings are brutal. I'm still under contract. Now, they could buy me out of my contract and give me a certain amount of money to go away, or they can move me to a different time slot, which isn't going to affect as much of like the ratings for the network, right? That's what happens. And most of the time in the real world, you get a job like this or whatever the job is, you don't really sign contracts. You get hired and then you can get fired. The difference is if Tua were to get fired, I guess you could say like cut, he's still walking away with whatever that guaranteed money was, the 20 or $22 million, whatever the scale was for the first round picks. So it's not the worst thing in the world. I think you look at Tua too. I took a look through the rest of the schedule, and in his total of 10 games he'll play, I think there's at least three extremely winnable games, 4 to 5 really winnable games, and then one or two that, you know, potentially he could get. So at 4-3 already with one win right now, if Tua gets this team, if he wins 6 out of the next 9 games, clearly the guy. He goes 5-4, let's say. Probably the guy. Now, what else do we need to see from Tua? We need to see him kind of unleash himself, right? Last week, clearly, I use this terminology all the time about the training wheels or the kid gloves, right? The training wheels were on for Tua. It was clear what Brian Flores wanted to do against the LA Rams. It was get the ball out of Tua's hands as quickly as you could. Quick throws, not really taking a lot of shots, kind of let him matriculate through the pocket a little bit. Tua's great on the run. I don't mean mobility like Kyler Murray running type of quarterback. He's a move the pocket type of quarterback. The same way, honestly, Tom Brady does this. Ben Roethlisberger is fantastic at it. Aaron Rodgers is fantastic at it. The way you move from tackle to tackle and step up and step back behind would be, you know, sack opportunities. He only got sacked once last week, Tua. So for all the bad you want to say, the QBR is horrible at 25. Completion percentage just over 54, 55%. That's not good either. It's not going to cut it for a potential playoff team. Need better than that. But he wasn't brutal. He didn't make mistakes. No interceptions. So at the beginning, that's what's going to happen. That's what the Dolphins are going to ask him to do. Now, here's the difference coming up to this week. While the Miami Dolphins defense has been great, the Arizona Cardinals offense has been high-flying as well. Told you about it in segment number one. Arizona Cardinals offense, by total offense, is number one in the NFL. This is not going to be like a slobber knocker type of game where there's no scoring. Tua's going to have to unleash something. And then the other part that hurts Tua a little bit is you didn't expect Myles Gaskin to have to go on the IR. And now you're relegated to whether it's, you know, Jordan Howard or this kid Ahmed or whether it's Matt Breida if he's healthy. That definitely hinders your opportunities to get things going. So Tua just needs to get the ball out, get into the playmaker's hands, and move. So yesterday we talked about being halfway through the NFL season, giving out awards. Now let's try to figure out playoff where to start. Who wins? We'll break it all down coming up next. I am Keith Irizarry. This is Coast to Coast. Don't go anywhere. Be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Rocking and rolling here on Coast to Coast. It is Keith Irizarry. Carver High is here. Mafia is here as well as we continue rolling along in hour number one of the program. Lots of stuff going on in the NFL. But as we have reached the midway point of the NFL season and tonight, obviously Thursday Night Football, we kick off week number 9, broke that game down a little bit. We'll talk more about the Niners and the Packers and make an official pick a little bit later in the program on that one. But I want to talk about if the playoffs were to begin today. Playoffs? Yeah, playoffs. I love it. Yeah, Jim Mora. Shout out, dude. Shout out, Jim Mora. So let's bring up the AFC. We have some fancy graphics for you, for our TV viewers, with what the bracket would look like in the AFC if we were to start the playoffs today. And what we know is that the Steelers would have the bye. They are the number one team if we were to start things right now. They get the bye. You got the Chiefs would be the 2, Bills the 3, Titans the 4, and then you see the rest of it there. Ravens would be the 5. So it's Titans versus the Ravens, Bills versus the Colts, Browns would be at Kansas City. Let's break each one down. I'll tell you what I think could, should, and would happen in each one. Bad matchup for the Cleveland Browns. Baker Mayfield, I think he would stumble and fall against Kansas City. I think Mahomes would light up that defense. I know Myles Garrett's playing awesome defensively for Cleveland right now. And I know that Nick Chubb would conceivably be back by then for the Cleveland Browns. You get your 1-2 punch again. No Odell Beckham Jr. He's not coming back. I didn't see, you know, I do want to see what Cleveland is coming out of this bye week, but Kansas City, I think they're on a mission right now. I'd love the addition of Le'Veon Bell, him and Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You want to talk about a 1-2 punch. That's a 1-2 punch. They win that game rather easily. Let's go to the Bills and the Colts. I think this is closer than we want to believe, and much to the chagrin of Carver High, because I know that he wants his Buffalo Bills to get a big win here. I think they win, but I think it's close. Indianapolis has the number one defense in just about every category. Now, the running game is weird. We never know which back is going to be the back. With that being said, all you need is one of them to shine. Phillip Rivers, I don't have enough trust in him to outshine the Buffalo Bills. I think the Bills will be able to at least neutralize or slow down Phillip Rivers and get just enough offense. Bills win that one in a close, low-scoring game. Titans and the Ravens. Give me Baltimore. Lamar's got to win a playoff game, right? Hasn't done it yet. He's got to win a playoff game. I'm not sold on Tennessee. I wasn't sold on them last year, and they proved me wrong and made a run all the way to the AFC Championship. I think Baltimore has got to get a win. So that's the beginning portion of what I got. Carver High, let's bring you on. Do you agree with my picks thus far?
Yeah, I do. I don't think that the Browns would have any chance in Kansas City. I think that of all the teams that I would want coming to Buffalo in the first round in January, it would be Phillip Rivers and a dome team like the Indianapolis Colts. So please let that happen, because I have a bad feeling it's going to be Baltimore, Pittsburgh. So if I can get Indy, I think that that's a game that the Bills can absolutely win at home in early January. Titans, Ravens, good game. That'd be a fun one. If that ever came to pass, I would actually, I think I'd go Ravens in that one as well. I think the Ravens would beat the Titans.
Baltimore's got to get a playoff win. All right, that's what we got so far for the AFC. Let's jump now to the NFC. Here's what we know as of right now. Seattle, they're the one seed. They would be getting the bye despite their despicable defense. That's what I'll call it right now. But they have, you know, Carlos Dunlap is there now, and Jamal Adams is going to be healthy. You'd have the Buccaneers taking on the Rams. You got the Packers and the Cardinals, and then you got the Eagles versus the Saints. Let's do the Eagles and the Saints first in this one. I think the Saints win this one. I know that a lot of people want to jump on the Philly bandwagon, thinking that once they would get to the postseason, they would figure it out. And once they get everyone healthy, they would figure it out. I like Philadelphia. I like Carson Wentz. I think he gets way too much slack for what he's done. He turns the ball over often, but he's also trying to do a little too much with a little too little on that team. This would be a Saints win. I think it's a close one. Saints by, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 points, something to that effect. Packers and Cardinals. I think this ends up being high scoring. Green Bay would end up winning this game. We'd have to assume that they're healthier by then, too. That offense is something special when Aaron Jones is there as the running back and Jamal Williams is just the complement back. We always talk about those kind of moments, right? When you have a backup player and they step in for the starter, that's cool. Backup can do it. Who's the backup to the backup? And Green Bay didn't really have that. A.J. Dillon wasn't going to be that dude this year. So Green Bay still wins that game. They beat the Cardinals. I'll say by 3, you know, close game there. Buccaneers, I think they blow out the Rams. And I'm not a Jared Goff hater, but I just don't think he can handle that Tampa Bay defense. I think that we talked about it all week long, what Antonio Brown could mean for Tampa Bay, and it just turns that offense into the super uber dynamic offense. You tell me, if they're healthy and have Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown, Scotty Miller as a 4 wide receiver, like team, and then Gronk and Brate at your tight end spots, plus an upper echelon offensive line, and then Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette. I don't understand how you stop that offense consistently enough to win a game. I don't get it. I don't see it. I don't think it happens. So there you go. There's my NFC picks. Carver High, hop in. Let me know what you think.
Yeah, the Rams are going to be an automatic. I'm going to be fading against them, whoever they play in the playoffs, because I think they are going to make it. I don't think they're as good as any of these other teams. I actually would take Arizona in Green Bay over the Packers. I think that if that's a matchup that you get, I think that they could win that football game. I would pick Arizona. And Saints have won on the road in some cold spots in January before. I wouldn't be worried about that with them. I think that they would win in Philadelphia as well.
Wow. Okay, cool. All right, so we only differ on one there. Let's jump back to the AFC and now see where I would have my bracket as we would stand going into the next round. You have the Steelers taking on the Colts. You got the Chiefs and the Ravens. Bottom side of your screen, you see the NFC's on there as well. Seahawks and Saints, Buccaneers, and the Packers. All right, let me start off with the AFC.
Okay. And in the AFC, as Keith was saying, you've got the Steelers and the Colts, you got the Chiefs and the Ravens, Seahawks, Saints, Buccaneers, Packers. That would be Keith's matchups in that situation. Keith, you know, these are some good ones too. Chiefs-Ravens would be a monster game. Seahawks against the Saints would be a lot of fun. Bucks-Packers, we've already seen that one this year and saw how it went down in Tampa. A couple good matchups here, Keith.
Yeah, I really love this Steelers and the Colts matchup. I think that is so intriguing to me. Again, this is like old school beat each other up type of matchup. You're going to have this defense of the Colts trying to hold in check Roethlisberger with all of these weapons that he has right now. I still think Pittsburgh ends up coming out on top of that one. And then it's Lamar, who has never beaten Kansas City. Can he finally get over the hump with the Baltimore Ravens? And my gut tells me no. I think Kansas City continues to drive and continues to move forward into an AFC title game. On the NFC side of things, Buccaneers and Packers is who I would have. I know you'd have Bucks and Cardinals. I think the Bucks are on a mission. They beat the Packers. I think it's a bad matchup for Green Bay. Again, another defense that they don't match up well with. And then the Seahawks and the Saints. I think this one actually is going to be fun. And here's the reason why. Seattle, I still don't believe that their defense is going to get that much better. So New Orleans will score points. Michael Thomas would conceivably be back, be healthy, be ready to play. I still say that the Seahawks come away with the win. And where does that lead us as we head into our title games? Championship weekend. I love these matchups that we would end up with. So in the AFC title game, it would be the Steelers and the Chiefs, the Seahawks and the Bucks. And we gave it away to you. I would have the Chiefs and the Bucks advancing to the Super Bowl. I think the Chiefs and the Steelers is a good matchup. I think that Cinderella, it hits midnight for Pittsburgh. A lot of people didn't expect Pittsburgh to even be at this spot at this point. Kansas City, they get the win there. Buccaneers and Seahawks. I'm riding right now with Tampa Bay. Everything about them screams to me Super Bowl. I opened the week up this week saying this team feels like a Super Bowl team. Feels like the first time we're going to get a squad going to play at their home stadium for a Super Bowl. So the way I would have it is Chiefs taking on the Bucks in the Super Bowl. Bring you back on Carver High. What do you think?
You know, that would be one. You talk about hype and ratings and building the game. Tom Brady and the Bucks at home in Tampa, remember, because that's where the Super Bowl would be this year against the defending champion Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. That would be some blockbuster stuff. If that was the matchup right now, I would take the Kansas City Chiefs. I would want to see Brady lose in Tampa at home in that game. Now, let's see if FanDuel agrees with you here, Keith. Here they are. The odds right now at FanDuel to win the Super Bowl, Chiefs plus 350 at the top, Steelers second, followed by the Bucks, Seahawks, Ravens, Packers, etc. So that's what FanDuel's thinking, Keith.
Yeah, you can call me Mr. FanDuel because that's the way I would have it too, right? I got the Chiefs winning. I'm with you. Chiefs would end up taking down the Buccaneers. I got this strange feeling. Here's what's going to happen. It feels like I've seen this before. Tampa Bay has a lead going into the third quarter. Patrick Mahomes, not playing that well. Playing all right. A backup running back, maybe Le'Veon Bell, comes in and catches a game-winning touchdown. Le'Veon Bell, the castaway. No one wanted him. The Steelers said goodbye. The Jets said, nah. I'm good. Patrick Mahomes throws a game-winning touchdown to Le'Veon Bell, and the Kansas City Chiefs win their second consecutive Super Bowl. How about that? It could happen. Coming up next,
we've seen that one before.
Darius Butler joins us. Oh, we've seen it. Darius Butler joins me next, coast to coast. I am Keith Irizarry. Keep it locked right here.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
And we're back coast to coast. Carver High here with you. Keith Irizarry as well. We're going to get him back in a moment. Also going to have Darius Butler joining the show in a little bit too. Adam Kaplan coming up in hour two as well with coast to coast here today. And we do have 49ers and Packers tonight, as we know. And we'll take a look right now at the odds for tonight. And it's moved around a little bit here. I saw early this morning when I woke up, it even creep up to 7.5. But at this point, we now see the odds going to 6.5 with the Packers, -118 on the money line, money line -320, over under 48.5. And when you look at a game like this, for me, with so many variables and so many people out, what I need to do is I need to go with what's the constant here. What's the one thing that I know is going to be good and is going to get me to the finish line? And that is Aaron Rodgers. There's no wide receivers for the 49ers. There's no running backs for the Packers. Defense, a lot of missing for the 49ers as well. So for me, Aaron Rodgers is the one guy in this game that I know that I can rely on from a betting standpoint. So -6.5, I'm going to go and I'm going to take Aaron Rodgers there. It's just too easy. It's just you can't trust Nick Mullins. You cannot trust the Niner D. I know that they beat him up a couple times last year. Completely different teams. And I believe we do have Keith back right now. So Keith Irizarry back with us here on Coast to Coast. Okay, not yet. Sorry, my bad there, Keith. Now we're here. And we'll get Keith back up, having some technical difficulties on his end. So Packers and 49ers tonight. We also have, let's do a little sign, tying the guys back there. We'll go to a little sound right now that we've got light up. And first, Lamar Jackson. So all the talk with Lamar Jackson last week was the mistakes that he made against the Pittsburgh Steelers and that he has to go and fix those mistakes. So now he's got an opportunity with the Colts going to Indy this week, -1.5 for the Ravens on the road. That line's moved around quite a bit too. Here is Lamar Jackson, and he knows there are a lot of mistakes that he has to clean up before this week gets going.
I'll get over it, but you know it's going to always be in my mind just because we lost that game, and I hate having turnovers, but you got to move on. You just like during the game, you know, if I had a turnover, I'd keep it going, score the next drive, so I can't dwell on it. You got to move forward, and that's what we're doing now. The game is over with. I'm mad about the result, but miss him again.
All right, I am back, and thank you so much there, Mr. Carver. Hi, that was the little Lamar Jackson for you. Carver, you did your thing, man. You are a lifesaver in the world that we live in. Listen, we live in a technologically challenged world at times. So Lamar Jackson, let's dive into Lamar and talk about it. Listen, he's got to put last week behind him. That's a fact. We know that. We went over the numbers that he has had against the Steelers, the Chiefs throughout the playoffs. Only one win. It's been rough sledding for Lamar Jackson. I talked about it in the previous segment too, where if you're Lamar Jackson, you got to get over the hump, got to figure out how to get a big win. How are you going to do that? Got to figure it out. He's lost all three times against the Chiefs in his career. And now you're talking about starting to do some stat crunching as well on Lamar Jackson. That's the scary part, is that after coming off an MVP season, are people figuring you out? Are they figuring out that offense? He is now 27th in passing yards, 17th in passing touchdowns of 12 this entire season, and 29th in completion percentage. Yikes. That is a bad look for Lamar Jackson. Just no bueno for Lamar Jackson. And Carver, I'll tell you this. This is not a great matchup for the Ravens. You know, we talk about the get right games all the time. This is not a get right game going up against a Colts defense that has been lights out all season long. The Baltimore 2.5-point favorite. I'm leery of Lamar Jackson in this game.
No, and you should be, especially coming off of last week. And what's the one thing that the Colts do pretty well, Keith? They are very good on the front seven. They're good stopping the run. The Ravens love to run the football. Even in that loss last week, they racked up the rushing yards against the Steelers. So they want to try that formula, and we see the blueprint now. Stop the run with the Ravens, and even in the Steelers' case last week, they didn't even have to stop the run. They just decided, we're going to sit back, we're going to play a lot of zone, we are going to make Lamar Jackson throw the football, and I expect, Keith, that the Colts are going to do the same thing this week and say, here you go, try to beat us deep. You can have your 175, 225 rushing yards. You're not going to put up as many points. Go ahead and throw the football.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Let's bounce around the NFL a little bit. A sneaky big matchup, your boys, the Buffalo Bills taking on the Seattle Seahawks. Seattle, depending on where you're looking, about a three-point favorite. Josh Allen, he knows mistakes, they won't cut it.
Just making sure that we're making smart decisions with the football. Again, if they want to play some soft zones, taking some of the underneath stuff, and when the big play presents itself, we got to make sure that we execute and go after it when we can. But again, moving the chains on third down, time of possession, and being able to flip the football field when we can, and that's something that we haven't done in the last couple of weeks. We've been pinned down a few times. And we haven't gotten a first down, and we've had to, three and out punt. So, one first down can change the course of a game there, and we understand that. So that's something we're drastically trying to improve.
Neither of these teams are defensive juggernauts. That 55 is looking pretty good as potentially an over, one of the highest implied totals of the weekend. Josh Allen was flying high for the first, four games of the season. Carver High was dancing. I don't know if you guys know this, but he started taking like merengue classes, salsa classes. He was ready to dance into a Super Bowl. Josh Allen was maybe going to be the league MVP. I heard that, everyone was crowning him already. And now over the last 3 weeks, Josh Allen looks more like last year's Josh Allen. So I asked you, Carver High, who is Josh Allen? Will the real Josh Allen stand up?
Yeah, it's time for him to adjust again, Keith. That's what it comes down to, because he came out improved in the first month of the season. He took all the things that he wasn't doing well a year ago, and he said, I'm going to get more accurate. I'm going to be more patient with the football. I'm not going to make stupid decisions. So now in the last 4 weeks, Keith, what they've done is everybody's dropping back and playing a cover two on him. They're not letting him look deep. They're kind of closing up some of the things that were successful for him. Didn't help that he didn't have John Brown for 3 weeks either, because that's their over-the-top threat. They need him out there. Diggs is going to get his, but when you have to watch Brown going over the top, that makes defenses work a little bit harder. You did see them start to get some running game going last week. Zach Moss, for the first time all year, was running the football well. Singletary had a good game too. But they need to throw the ball like they did in September to beat this team. You want to get in a shootout with the Seattle Seahawks, 70 degrees and sunny, nice conditions in Buffalo coming up on Sunday, Keith. This is going to be a track meet, and Josh has to get back against a team that Seahawks are 6-1, but like you said, their defense stinks. They haven't stopped anybody all year. It's been Russ and the offense carrying them. I want to see Josh get back to that 325, three touchdowns, that offensive aerial game that he had in September.
We should do some props tomorrow on this game in particular about, passing yardage and stuff like that, because I like Josh Allen to wake up. I like Stephon Diggs to have a big weekend as well. You brought up the running game for Buffalo. I love what I'm seeing out of Moss, man. He had the same amount of carries as Devin Singletary, goes from almost 90 yards rushing, ends up with two touchdowns. What we're learning is what we thought coming into the season, that Moss was going to be the red zone guy. Now, the thing, too, about Devin Singletary is you would go, okay, he's going to get the targets. I know Buffalo didn't throw the ball very much, but he only ended up with, one catch, or I think it was one catch and two targets on the day for Devin Singletary. Zach Moss is very slowly creeping in off of the toe injury, whatever it was, the injury issues. He looks healthy. He looks like he could be the bell cow. And Devin Singletary maybe falls back into that complementary running role, which I think suits him better. He could be your home run hitter. I love that role for Devin Singletary. Now, on the Buffalo side of things, Carver, I don't see how they slow down Seattle. Like, Seattle's... I don't see how Seattle doesn't score 35 to 40 points in this game. How does Buffalo slow them down?
Well, here's the good thing for Buffalo. They're most likely going to get Micah Hyde back this week at safety. He's been out with a concussion last week. So they got Poyer and Hyde back there. Here, you know what they really need, Keith? Trey White had a could have possibly won Defensive Player of the Year last year. He had an all-pro year at cornerback for the Bills. He has not been the same this year. He was hurt the first couple weeks. He missed the game against Tennessee, that Tuesday night game. And just really the last week or two, you're starting to see him get back to himself a little bit. So if they can get Trey White playing well, and they got Levi Wallace back too, they've been really banged up at corner all year. That's why I thought they needed to make a move at the deadline. That King move to the Titans, that's something that I thought the Bills should have considered because they needed some help in the secondary. If White can kind of lock down maybe DK Metcalf, you still got so many other weapons though, right? You still got to stop Lockett. You got to stop everything else going on. But the Bills need better play in the secondary from White, and Tremaine Edmonds hasn't been as good either at middle linebacker, who's a young stud for them, was excellent last year. They just need guys to play more to their level, Keith.
All right, let's jump over to Sunday Night Football. Give a little love again to the Saints and the Buccaneers. You got two future first ballot Hall of Famers, two of the three or four best of this generation. Tom Brady, probably the best that's ever done it with his, you know, bountiful numbers. And these two, and listen, every TV network's going to tell you, each week, one of them overtakes the other one as the all-time touchdown leader. And Tom Brady, we've talked about it a lot this week, has a brand new weapon to break out. It is Antonio Brown. He's fired up.
I'm just excited to put my hand in the pile. There's so much great guys here. Excited to play with one of the greatest quarterbacks all time at TB12. I'm excited to be around Mike Evans, Chris Goodwin, you know, Scotty Miller. I'm excited to learn and be around the guys and, you know, motivate the guys and learn from the guys and put my hand in the pile and hopefully help be the reason we win. So I'm just super grateful for this opportunity. Excited to be around the guys and everyone here. And I'm excited to fit in here and do what's best for us to win, whatever that entails.
The best thing in that quote, Carver High. What was the best? You know what? I want to see if you know me yet. If you got what I caught there. What was the best thing about that Antonio Brown soundbite?
Was it Chris Goodwin? Did you like that
exactly.
part?
Where oh my god! Like, come on, man.
Listen, he knows his team. He's just learning these guys' names, Keith. He just got there. He's only been in the mansion at Tom's place for a couple of days. He's still got to learn everybody's name. It's all good for AB. He's going to get everything done. My favorite part was of that whole thing yesterday was him wearing the TB12 hat. Like, that's just just incredible. Like, he's got the TB12 hat on. I love Tom. These guys, you talk about a bromance, Keith. I mean, AB and Tommy, it's amazing. Like, you saw the picture of them there hugging when they scored that touchdown on the Patriots last year. True bromance. He's scoring on Sunday night, by the way. If you want to a couple props tomorrow, we will get the Antonio Brown anytime touchdown prop on FanDuel. They have not put it up yet. I've been checking every day. I am going to hammer that one, Keith, because he is going to score. It might be the only ball he catches all night, but he's going to score a touchdown.
I actually really like the Buccaneers to win and anytime touchdown for AB. I think that makes sense. I don't know if now we don't have the soundbite. I know this, but I'm going to just let you know this. The rest of that soundbite, he actually kept talking and he said he really loves Mike Evans. He's a big fan of Bobby Gronkowski. Cameron Brate is what he said. And Scotty Miler. He said Scotty Miler is his boy. He loves Scotty Miler. So he's really excited. And Ronald Jonas, he's the fourth Jonas brother. And Leonard Fournetti. Yeah. Oh, Antonio Brown. Thanks for the fun, man. We're looking forward to the season. It's Coast to Coast. I'm Keith Irizarry.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back here Coast to Coast, it is Keith Irizarry with you as we wind down hour number one. Here's something I find very interesting. It is very simple to just, you know, take the favorites and hope that you're going to do well. And typically, if you just take favorites, you'll probably end up doing well. This has been a weird season in the NFL. And the more you think about it, And I want your take on this one, Carver High, as well. The lack of a real home field advantage has jumped out to me. No real crowds, no real ambiance of a home field, because we're crunching some numbers. So Underdogs went 10-4 against the spread in week 8. Seven Underdogs won outright last week. And then against the spread for the season, 57%, 68-51. So Underdogs, while usually not the most reliable, you know, way to gamble, kind of reliable right now. Carver, do you think I'm onto something with the lack of a home field advantage?
I think that it is the single biggest reason for the numbers that you're saying right there. Not having that home crowd that can cause false starts, that can call, you know, all those other things. I think it factors in big time. There are some environments that are normally very hostile, very tough to play in, and they just are not a factor this year. Even the ones where, you know, there's 7,000 people or there's 13,000 people. I guess it helps a little, but it ain't like having 70,000 people jammed into a stadium. So the dogs are barking, Keith, and I think that not having the fans in the seats has a lot to do with it.
And I think it's going to stay this way, too. As long as there's no fans, I think that's going to happen. I mean, I kind of feel like, to an extent, if you want to harken back to like the bubble for NBA and NHL, sometimes the lack of fans did help. And sometimes the lack of a home court advantage, it helped the teams that were more veterans. And I think we could see that going forward, too. Maybe some of the young teams might struggle down the stretch in the NFL. Winding down hour number one, hour two on the other side of the break. It's Coast to Coast. I am Keith Irizarry. Do not go anywhere.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.